what we're seeing real doesn't matter. Did it ever? Find out on Haunted MTL's High Art Camp with contributors Parzival, J.M. Brannick, and a special guest.
Welcome to High Art Camp, a podcast that is the end-all be-all if a movie can indeed call itself art. I am your host and highly awarded art critic, J.M. Brannick, aka Box Human, with my other host and highly awarded art critic, Parzival. Wave to the people, Parz.
Hi.
We are two mega giants at the top of our game, coming at your baby inexperienced little ears to settle once and for all. Is this art? Joining us today is guest mega super art critic Corcord.
Hi.
She comes with skills and background in English literature and criminal justice with interests in dystopias, slashers, and folk horrors. Welcome to the show, Corcord.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, third time's the charm, huh? So this is part three of three, the end all be all, the trilogy, the bully trilogy.
Yeah.
So if you have not listened to the first two, that sucks to be you. I suggest you go and listen to the other two.
Don't get your shit together.
Yeah, get your shit together. Okay? Just get all your shit. No, I'm not going to make that Rick and Morty joke. They did it way better. But seriously, go watch or don't watch. I don't think you could watch the first two episodes unless you're super high art camp. But go listen to the first two episodes and then come back to us or not, whatever. I don't care. I'm not your mother. But this is the third one, the final one. And we are talking about, oh, by the way, spoilers, duh. And we are talking about 2001's Bully by Larry Clark. And that was picked by Parz. And just to get people up to speed, let's do a little bit of a synopsis or in slash why you picked it, Parz.
Because it was I thought it was a masterpiece and I wanted to talk to other people about it.
Yep. And it was basically about teens, sexuality, murder, revenge, telling everybody about the murder, getting caught because they told everybody about the murder. Like you do, like dumb teens do. So we're going to go a little more in depth with it. We did in our past episode, we kind of dove deeper into it, maybe what the director was thinking, and we ended off on a cliffhanger, dun dun dun, of a point that I have forgotten but Parz has remembered because I'm old. Parz, please expand on what we were talking about at the very last episode.
Yeah, so before I needed a brain break, we were talking about how, Brannick, you said that this film, Bully, should not be shown to parents either. And as far as a warning goes, you know, because kids don't generally act this way, dress this way, listen to these, you know, same things. And for other reasons, setting and, you know, other reasons. But what I would say is that this is a tool. This film can be a tool for both introspection and retrospection in parents, like parents who were these teens age in this, or this kid's age in this movie, or around there, you know. But it's not a guaranteed, you know, it's not guaranteed you're going to have that experience because we're having several different experiences just within this podcast. So, I mean, go into this movie at risk for sure.
That's a good sum up. That's true. Mm-hmm. We didn't really talk about Corcord. What is your connection with this movie? Did you feel any kind of connection with these characters? Did you see yourself in any of this? How is teen Corcord?
Teen Corcord spent a lot of time at home and did not connect with these characters at all. And current Corcord also didn't really connect to these characters at all. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think teen Court Court and teen Brannick would probably...
We'd probably be friends.
Yeah. But not together. Just
no, like online.
Right, exactly, exactly. Separate, you know, but we're friends.
Yeah.
Like, right now.
We enjoy the idea of each other.
Exactly, the concept of a friend. Exactly.
Yeah, and I was the kid who was always trying to fit in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I would end up with all different sorts of people. But my brain works differently, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to really connect with both the characters, the young characters, and the parent.
Really?
Yes.
Now, do you think that's because you are a parent now?
Yes.
Okay.
Like all the parents, or is there like a particular one?
All of the parents.
Okay.
And what about the kids? Is there a specific one or all the kids?
All of the kids. I could see myself. Well, I mean, after watching the movie, I could see Ellie and I had some similarities. But after reading the book, I'm not so sure on that. I think it's just like an overall with the different people that I've encountered. Because I was always watching everybody else to see how to act.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it's a lot like Goffman. I think a lot of societal, especially as teenagers, we look to others to see what we should mirror ourselves. It's just a play. Who should we be playing? What role are we taking? You know, we look to others to see where on the stage should we be in life. And I think you're right on that, because I remember too, when I was younger, also kind of looking for that. I just tended to be in my room mostly, though. So I didn't have to be on that stage as often. I took the easy way out. I still do. I'm still like, I'll stay home. I'm good.
Yeah.
And so I can kind of see that. I think too, like we said before, as I keep hitting my fucking table, it's a beautiful table, but it's a fucking table when it's in my way. It's, you know, when you're in that sense of that age, you know, your life is so much chaos, hormones and life expectations from your parents, from your peers, from yourself. It's just, there's a lot to take in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think generationally, that also kind of changes a little bit too. But the expectations are always going to be kind of the same. There's always that point in your life, even in stories long, long ago, when it's like, oh, coming of age. I mean, that's why there's a trope for it. That's why there's a genre for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's when we become what we're going to be. And there's such a huge pressure on that. And I think that's a really great place to start a story. So, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but I guess I was showing appreciation to that point. I was showing appreciation to that being a source of conflict to the characters, an internal conflict outside of the external conflict. But I think a lot of it was their internal conflict just rattling around and making everything external.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad for the guy that was in Mean Girls. That was the only character I felt bad for. And I think because he was in Mean Girls.
Yeah.
And I also felt bad because I'm like, don't be with your cousin. Your cousin don't know.
Just play Mortal Kombat.
Just play Mortal Kombat and turn people into babies.
I had one character in not Heathers. I actually just watched Heathers just before we started the other episode.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. That was nice. Yeah.
I like it, and that's kind of what I liked that could be. Like, it was a very tongue-in-cheek. I felt like this could have been maybe, but it's hard when you're dealing with actual real people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But
okay,
but yeah, you were saying like with Heathers. Well, I mean, before we went to Heathers.
Oh, yeah, Heather, the actual character. She was the only one that I felt for.
Mm-hmm. And even Marty, which is kind of like a sad thing, because like you said, Court, there's a point where he is very violent with Lisa,
mm-hmm.
to the point of leaving very deep bruises, and very, you know, against having a baby.
Yeah.
And again, it's very hard to identify with him just because he is acting so violently.
Right.
And then we see the aftermath of that. Anyway, we're going around and around and around and around and around. I got my beaver shot out of the way. I think I'm kind of good.
Well, there was just that. There was one more thing I wanted to touch on, and that was this, because doing a lot of thinking on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am leaning more toward this being not just a sexual thing, but a dominance thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this class, this white middle class, are not being taught dominance, proper dominance in their house.
Like egalitarianism, they're not taught proper, safe, and healthy relationships.
Right, right. I just wanted to read this here. This is a piece from The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined by Steven Pinker. It's an issue of it. I'll get the resource. Though I am skeptical of theories of parental influence that say that fatherless boys grow up in violent. All right, we'll pause there. We can argue whether or not these boys are fatherless, but because they lack the role model or paternal discipline, widespread fatherlessness can lead to violence for a different reason. All these young men who aren't bringing up their children are hanging out with one another, competing for dominance instead. The mixture was combustible in the inner city, as it had been in the cowboy saloons and mining camps of the Wild West. This time, not because there were no women around, but because the women lacked the bargaining power to force the men into civilized lifestyle.
So it goes back to feminism. And roles, gender roles,
mm-hmm.
is basically kind of what you're saying, is like, because Marty and Bobby are not, like, because there's that toxic masculinity,
mm-hmm.
they're not able to fully express themselves as full and functioning humans, correct?
I don't know what everybody's feelings are on the toxic masculinity. I haven't done much research on that term. Okay. But I mean, I've heard of it,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Okay. I mean, yeah, toxic masculinity is basically like, it's like the worst when it comes to theory. You need spouse for this one because they actually got a degree in this, 2 degrees in this, whatever. but it's basically kind of like the macho, the best example that I can off the top of my head is like in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you had like Taserface and all of his crew that got rid of, well, and even what's his face, the blue guy, same, terrible with names, all of their crew was toxic. It was masculine to the absolute most. They could not show emotion. They could not show except for anger, except for toughness, except for all this stuff. And Quinn grew up in this. This was all that he knew. And it was a terrifying experience for him. And only in his kind of like dying moments could his father, his adoptive father, actually start to show emotions of caring and kindness. And even though he held that in him this whole time, that's kind of like in the vein of toxic masculinity.
Okay, I'd say like that might be part of it. I'm not sure if it's all of it, but mm-hmm. maybe part of it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting theory. People have said it way better than I have, or mm-hmm. could have.
No, I liked your examples.
Oh, thank you. I actually stole that a little bit from Lindsay Ellis. Go check her out, Shay Lindsay. But it's an interesting concept. Bell Hooks has also talked about it too. Mm-hmm. But I don't disagree with that. I think that's actually a very interesting point, especially when it comes to like the like you said, kind of like, I don't know, the idleness of white suburban teens. You know, they have a dominance, they have a privilege,
mm-hmm.
and yet they're aimless with it. And so they attack each other with it. I mean, that's an interesting concept. That's something that I haven't really thought of with this movie.
Well, I mean, over and over and over again, and I've got it in the book as well. I've highlighted, there's just displays of dominance all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, between the boys, between the girls, between the boys and the girls. In the book specifically, there was one instance, there was instances of, you know, Lisa dominating over her mother. There were instances of another man, a stranger, gaining dominance over both Marty and Bobby, and they running off or them speeding off, like all over. That was the word I wrote down the most throughout this book was dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Display of dominance.
I think it was Foucault that was talking about like how every relationship is a relationship of dominance.
Yes, I strongly am. I've learned a lot through this, and that's where I'm.
I could be wrong, though. He said a lot of shit, okay? He said a lot of cool shit, but he said a lot of shit. So I could be attributing that to, but I think, yeah, and it's a very interesting theory. And I think especially, too, as you said, it's a very primitive instinct, mm-hmm. like the dominance and subservience. And again, we're going back to primitive instincts of manhood, of womanhood. I use those terms loosely, of adulthood, I should say. That primitive clique structure and social pecking order and what have you, and sexuality and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's interesting point.
I just like was going to expand that.
Yeah, go ahead.
As far as primitive goes, just because like they are like they do expand. I wrote that down that they display toxic masculinity throughout like most of it because like all the boys do in like their own way because for the most part they all just like resort to violence whenever they're feeling basically anything
mm-hmm.
and like it's just like you know like masculinity and femininity everything is just so socially constructed and so for toxic masculinity it's just like where am I going?
Well even Donnie which is surprising because Donnie yeah. is like the silliest of characters, you know,
right.
We see him very endearing of, you know, I'm Heather's boyfriend, you know?
Yeah.
Just like
hippie boy.
Like. And suddenly there's a twist and a turn and suddenly he's like out for blood.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to fucking kill him. And it's just like, what?
And it's like mm-hmm. so much of masculinity too is just kind of like them trying to prove who's like most masculine to each other, especially like when the like climax scene, you know, when they're killing him and then it's like they're trying to prove to each other too that they can all be the most violent that they can be,
except for Heather.
Yes. Yeah.
She's like,
poor Heather.
Yes, I am out.
Well, and she has a hell of a start to life too.
Yeah. Oh, what was it? I don't think they touched on that really in the movie.
She, well, in the car, I think she was telling Lisa or it might have been Allie.
Yes.
Oh yeah. That scene, yeah.
Her grandfather killed her mother or something like that. And and then she ended up getting involved in an underage prostitution ring.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where she met Allie.
Like, had just gotten out of rehab too and then was back and all like this yeah, all she, over yeah, again.
That's right. They picked her up from rehab.
Yeah, she was very fragile. They just like threw all this on her like, okay, let's go kill a guy.
Lived in different motels and every night the mom would read the story, the court documents and everything of her death. Yeah, like she memorized it by the, you know.
Yeah. They're like, hey, cool hair highlights. Let's kill some guy. You just got out of rehab and you have this horrible backstory, but she's like, okay, cool.
Let's just gonna do all the drugs in the world again.
Yeah, yeah.
It you don't think it makes you not think about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's numbing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It can be. Yeah,
yeah, especially in this case. All right, do we have anything else that we need to touch on?
Did we want to talk about the music, or did we already kind of talk about that?
I kind of talked about that last time a little bit with cultural appropriation.
Yes.
Did you want to add to that?
Would you want to repeat what you said that I could add to it?
I'll repeat a little bit of what I said. And for more info, I would definitely check out, there's a really good researcher called Bakari Kitwana, BakariKitwana. Unfortunately, I couldn't copy any of his stuff because it was in PDF format that I don't have PDF stuff for. But anyway, let's see. This is from, I'll say this from Delilah Friedler, and this one's from medium.com, and she's talking about a 1998 spin article that Charles Aaron published called What the White Boy Means When He Says Yo. Mm-hmm. And she says, Aaron predicts that white people's embrace of hip-hop could spark a national awakening on race. Yet the economic gulf between blacks and whites is worse today than it was in 1998, and the state's war on black lives continues. Surely some white people have been changed by hip-hop, but for many, it remains just aesthetic. The shit you bump to when you're trying to turn up. A portion of today's wardens and cops must have grown up liking NWA. And I think that was like really apparent when Marty was rapping along to the music, and especially when he was like, fuck the police. Although we didn't have any signs or reasons or other than him just rapping along to even identify with those lyrics or the culture or anything like that.
Yeah.
Jason Rodriguez, in his Colorblind Ideology and Cultural Appropriation in Hip-Hop, also said they, using meaning whites, use hip-hop to position themselves in relationship to their peers as savvy cultural insiders, more smoothly moving through a cultural milieu of blackness. So basically, using their racial privilege to move through life, as kind of like these teens do, but then appropriating certain things, like, again, with the music accompanies it to promote a certain kind of badassery or something like that. Marty is, when he's holding a gun, and it's to hip-hop. Hip-hop is always kind of a constant flow that is underneath what's going on, but we never actually see anybody black. We never actually see any of the black rappers, like even on a CD or anything like that. We do see one rapper at one time, and that was Eminem, who was a white rapper. So that, to me, is kind of actually a statement, because to go out of your way to have all of these black rappers in your soundtrack and not show them and only show a white rapper, I don't know what that specifically means, but it is a complete and utter absence of anything black but emulating black culture.
That was part of the point, though.
Okay.
Clark's not okaying this behavior. He's presenting this behavior. Eminem took America by storm, and it was this audience that he had. It was white middle class. And that can be shown in his song, White America.
Well, it's not just Eminem. I mean, you look at Kanye West, you look at 50 Cent, you look at, oh my God, I'm so blanking. Most of the people that I listen to are kind of underground. But, you know, I'm trying to think of, like this one said, NWA, DMX. Public Enemy. There were other bands at the time that were present.
But it was taking a shot at Eminem. Why would you want, I don't know why you'd want anybody else there.
How is it taking a shot? I guess I don't understand that, though, that these kids that are planning a murder are the ones that are supporting you?
Well, in the book, it talked all about, well, I mean, over and over again, it would talk about the music that they listened to.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of it.
Well, yeah, and I'm not saying that that's not part of it. There was a huge, I mean, like, even in my school, there was a lot of white suburban kids that would listen to rap. I like rap, you know. I am so white. I know that, but also there's that thin line of cultural appropriation and not, you know, giving credit to the writers, the actors, not the actors, the artists.
Well, yeah, there was other artists. I'm not saying there wasn't other artists. I'm saying Eminem was the one that parents were afraid their kids were listening to, and he knew it. And every kid was listening to Eminem. That he was the focus of white parents. It was either him or it was Marilyn Manson, and the kids were listening to rap, so they would put Eminem there. That's like, my take on it.
Yeah, I feel like one thing the movie was kind of lazy about showing how privileged these kids were, because they were able to like emulate Black culture and listen to music by Black artists, and but they can enjoy it, but they don't have to face any really like authoritarian consequences of just enjoying it. And like the movie doesn't really acknowledge like that privilege at all. And just like the inclusion of a hip, because like it would have been different, I think, if they had the kids listening to hip hop to show that they were like influenced by it, or they just like connected with it. And then maybe the soundtrack was different, but the soundtrack also was very centered on hip hop and rap. And that kind of, and since it was just like so white, but the soundtrack was all like Black artists, it's kind of telling me that they care more about like the Black culture than like than the Black people that actually like create it.
Or the lyrics that go into the rap itself. Because a lot of rap is about cultural, especially during that time. Cultural change. And like, if I guess that was my thing. The character is supposed to be this like carefree surfer, in one scene, but is like gleefully like rapping along and connecting with the expression of like fuck the police, you know. But that's a cognitive dissonance. You can't be this carefree rapper and then be fuck the police at the same time. I mean, if you do, then bring that to focus. Why is this white kid identifying with rap? Why is he identifying with Black culture? Why is show me why this resonates with him, besides badass gangsta. That's, I guess, what I mean. It's a very superficial jump.
I get that totally. I totally get that.
Okay.
And that's the way it was in the book too. And
I think that was
felt
a way
that coming out.
Yeah, and I think that was a lot in the 90s, just generally.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like this specific movie, you know, fuck this movie, because I think, again, it's that geode, you know, of that time era where that was acceptable. It aged poorly.
There was a quote from Bell Hooks that I thought connected like pretty well with it. So the article is called Bell Hooks, Cultural Criticism and Transformation. And then the title of the section that she's writing about is called Rap, Authentic Expression or Market Construct. And at the very bottom of the first paragraph, she says, we would have to acknowledge that young white consumers, primarily male, oftentimes suburban, most get energized by and rap music was misogyny, obscenity, pugilistic eroticism, and therefore that form of rap began to take the largest sums of money.
It became a business.
Yeah, so it was kind of focusing less on the artists like Public Enemy, who were very, you know, vocal about like the racism that was happening, and instead it just kind of turned it into something else that the white music industry could commodify.
Mm-hmm. And that's happened before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can it happen again?
Yeah.
Can we all agree that if Clark had focused in on something, this movie could have been better?
I think it has the potential.
Depending on what he's focusing in on, too. But yeah.
Like what? Like,
even something. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
or even
the,
just
the Marty's ad, like attitude, the surfer, and then the gangsta type. Like,
yeah, or
focusing
like
on that reason.
Or just like, you know, like why they all just decided to like kill this guy, and why. Because I mean, obviously, like, I don't know. It's just. Yeah, he didn't just focus on anything.
Yeah, I would say focus more on Marty and Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's their relationship that really matters.
Yeah.
To the story. Everybody else just got in the way.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wrote. I said, well, so from either Marty or Bobby's perspective, you know, choose one and then go from there.
Or at least, or focus on both and the similarities and the differences between them.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would still like his style. There was a lot of cinematography that I did not care for, but I think it would have been better I think character-wise, I would have connected more, and it would have been a cleaner story.
I thought, yeah, or if he wanted to stick with his lot of information and a lot of moving parts, a lot of characters, I thought maybe he could, has this been done in film that you know of? Like being from the perspective of the vehicle?
Yes, I can't think of it, but I know it's been done.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The vehicle?
The vehicle is what we watch.
I'm sure it has been. I don't know of that. The only vehicle that I kind of know is like Fury Road, where like most of it is on that vehicle. And that is a fucking masterpiece. So I guess it could be. But I think writing really
I gotta do a story like that.
What?
Like have it be from the car's perspective or something. Like some shit.
We should all do a story where it's like from one thing's perspective.
Or a screenplay, yeah.
Oh my God.
That'd be great.
She's
from my toilet's perspective. I say like you're cute and coy. She's perspective. I'm like toilet. You found him. Let's get real interesting.
It could, yeah. You can come up with a cool story together.
Do they talk or is it just from their perspective?
Just from their perspective.
I would love to just hear like a God's voice coming from them, but they never.
Talking diaphragm.
Just a camera on the ceiling.
But they never actually show.
Well, that's our next project, people. So
yeah, watch out.
Never. Reading that because it's probably not going to be able to be put onto our website.
I want to know the story from the used condom because I feel like that has a lot.
Oh, it has a lot of story to it. That's a novella. Let's just say it gets used more than once.
Yeah.
It's like the fancy kind that's like made out of like skin, I don't know.
Silicone.
No, there's like some.
Do they make silicone condoms?
There's like some fancy kind for people who are allergic to latex.
Oh yeah,
that's very expensive.
No, I'm not good with latex, but I haven't used a condom in so long.
You go to the doctor, they're like, "Do you want condoms?" You're like, "No." I'm like, "I'll just put some in your bag anyway." Okay.
Thanks.
I'll hand them out for Christmas. Thank you.
Oh my God, the story from Santa's condom.
That's great.
Santa wouldn't need one. She's done. She's done. She's in menopause.
She's
they can have as much as they want. She's good.
They gotta be protected of diseases.
Now
though.
The Easter bunny.
Oh my God.
Cause they fuck like rabbits. They don't punch. Anyway, okay, we're getting way off subject. Do we have anything else?
I think we're ready to rate.
Yeah.
I think I've said my piece. I think Court has said her piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think Pars has said her piece. I think we are ready to rate, you guys. We are ready to ready discuss. To we are ready to discuss, is this art? So we are at our bottom line. And we will now discuss the 5 key points of artistic concept. To determine once and for all, is this art? So no more debates. This is it. So first up is technical skill, which is efficient use of language, genre to convey meaning. So that means cinematography, score, acting, writing, lighting, Foley work, casting, etc. Who wants to start off with technical skill? Nobody. All right, I guess I will start off. It will not come as a surprise. Out of 5 Cthulhus, I give this a 2 technical skill. The lighting is good. The shots could be bad, just like the dog cam I did not like. I could not stand that circle cam when they were talking in a circle and it just kept
rotating. Oh my God,
I'll agree with you, them. Yeah.
It's like, why am I getting dizzy in a movie right now?
Fucking nuts.
That's a little bit too mean to the audience.
Guys, fast forward.
Nuts.
Sick.
Also, I thought like some of the shots like from, I forget what the fancy term is, but basically like where you're looking past somebody's shoulder. I thought those were kind of weird because some of them were like from behind plants, like looking at other people. And I thought that was kind of weird. I didn't like it. Foley work was okay. Acting, they did as best as they could. I did not like the writing, so they did a good job with it. I thought acting was good, so casting was good. Writing, I did not like. Again, it was just a lot of like, whoa, man, we're gonna kill him. Yeah, we're gonna kill him. Kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him. Really kill him? Oh, man. Whoa. Wow. And that was kind of
wow.
So to me, it was like, yeah. So technical skill for me is 2.
And for me, it's a 4. So I absolutely loved the writing. I was not fond of Lisa's acting.
Really?
It could have been casting, though.
Okay.
It could just not. It could have been a casting thing.
You think she just didn't click with the character, or?
Yes. I really thought everybody else did a pretty good job. The score, I thought, needed work. I understand he's just trying to tell it like it happened, but and so it wouldn't seem so movie-ish. But it could have definitely used some work, the soundtrack. I was not a fan of the lighting all the time, just sometimes. So my score is a 4.
So I also gave mine a 2. Cinematography, the dizzy scene just really killed it for me. I just hated that. I mean, I understand the purpose of it, but there became a point where it was just too much. I loved the ending part when they were all in the courtroom at their preliminary hearing, I think it was. Like, they, like, showed them all fighting, and then it kind of just, like, did, like, single shots of all the, like, parents watching them fighting, and the music was kind of, like, intense, and that was, like, I don't know, I felt like that was so suspenseful, and it was kind of, like, what a lot of the rest of the movie could have been. And then, but otherwise, the camera kind of didn't really have much consistency, and there were just, like, way too many crotch shots, but maybe that's just, like, I mean, that, I don't know. It just got annoying to watch after a while, and it was very male-gazy. And then the score, I mean, we kind of, like, talked about that. It just wasn't, like you said, it wasn't as good as it could have been. And I liked the acting. I thought that they all did really great with what they could do. And, like, I, like, had good reason to kind of just hate or, like, sympathize with, like, every character. Didn't like the writing at all. There wasn't any character development. And it was really just clouded by all the millions of shots and sex scenes and drug scenes that didn't really serve the story. And I think he could have showed how, I think he could have shown, you know, how, like, sex and drugs, like, played a part in their life without, like, so many scenes.
We are going to concept, which is, like, the imaginative idea, the creativity that went behind it. So that means the subject matter, the content, the meaning, and significance. Court, do you want to start us off?
Yes. So I gave it a 2.5. It was a good concept because it was a really interesting story, but the execution was not good. The subject matter, it was just very surface level messages that didn't hone in on really anything. And I think there were a lot of parts that, like, a lot of those messages could have had a significance had they been executed better.
All right. Thank you. So
you're ours.
Yeah, thank you.
I gave this a 4 based off of just he should have focused. That's it. Okay. I thought it was great aside from he should have focused.
Okay. Is there a specific thing that you wish he would have focused on?
He could have focused on a lot of different things. I thought it would have been interesting. Like, I don't know if this has been done or if it has been done or not, but one of the parents went to church group while all this is happening. I thought that might have been an interesting focus if we were to focus on that child and parent.
Which parent was that? Was it Allie's?
I don't remember. It was one of the girls or Derek. I don't remember which one.
Yeah, that would have been interesting, though.
That's just what sticks out, I guess.
Okay, thank you. I gave this a concept of 1. I'm just put, it's based on a real story, but it's not a compelling story. I think it could be a compelling story. I think it's just, again, how it's framed. It just doesn't compel me. I never really felt worried about these teens. I never really felt sympathetic. There were small parts of these scenes that I did feel sympathetic, but it was never like a deep connection to where I'm like, oh no, don't do that. Or, oh God, that's not going to be good. It was like, okay, all right, they're doing this now. Okay, now they're doing
this. So there was no like sense of dread for you?
No.
Okay.
Nope, absolutely not. And I feel like since there are so many real stories, so many sad and twisted and horrible, unfortunate stories in our lives that we know of, to say this one, I felt like it was like, is that it? You know, there are so many compelling stories. And I felt like this one wasn't as much. I didn't read the book. From what I saw of the movie, it wasn't as much as I was hoping or could have been. Like, especially, I love true crimes. So like watching this, I'm like, ooh, okay. I just spent 2 hours watching this. Whereas like I can watch hours and hours and hours about other true crimes, you know, the same case, and still be like, well, what happens? You know, like, let's talk to that one person again or something like that. Because I feel for the characters, or I feel for the victim, or even if the victim's an asshole, like, I still want to figure out what happened, you know? And to this, it's like kind of an easy shut case, you know, of, okay, these teens did this. Unfortunately, that's kind of where I stand on that, is a one. So now we're going to move to aesthetics, which is the sense of beauty of it, the elevation of senses and the pleasure from the movie that we've been given. Parj, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I gave it a 4. Once again, I think I get it. You want to make it as documentary as you can, but well, not as you can, but that kind of style. But I would have liked more colors, more audio. And I think that's it. Yeah, okay. I give it a 4.
Okay. Strong 4. Court, what do you give for aesthetics?
I gave it a 3. There were some of the camera of the, because there were a lot of moments where it did feel surreal and kind of like where I was in their like world. And then there were other times where it just like, it made me feel like really tired. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
For aesthetics, I gave it a 3. I said it was dated, but in kind of like a nostalgic kind of dream pop sense of it, especially the beginning of it. It felt a lot of like the Big Lebowski or Pulp Fiction kind of a like a color palette.
Yeah.
And like you said, there was that kind of like not quite reality, not quite fakeness, but like that in-between world where we can get this in movies where it's like, we know that it's, in a way, they know that it's fake, but it's so beautiful to watch and to embrace and to be a part of. And there were parts of that in this movie that were like that, that it was just a good, you know, very pretty, very nice sense of direction where it just was like in that beautiful kind of capsule. Like you said, as the time went on, sometimes it did get kind of a little bit, like you said, kind of tired, especially like the scenes when all the kids were there. I would sometimes feel emotionally drained because all of the kids were there and they were all talking and all doing things and it was very cluttered. And I thought that was kind of not as aesthetically pleasing to me, especially like in the beginning. The scene that pops out to me when I say this is when Allie and Lisa do come into the meat market, and the meat market is very kind of bland and, you know, fluorescent lighty, kind of gross. And Allie is very beautiful and shiny, and she's got the lipstick, and I think she had a sucker too, or something like that. Oh, you know, a
phallic symbol kind of thing.
Yeah, just this very like sexual thing. She's got this very small, I think it was a tube top or something like that. And Allie's got this red hair and things like that. And it was very a beautiful color palette. And I was like, oh, this is very pretty. And there were moments of that in this film that I wanted to see more of. I wanted to see them play around a little bit more with that kind of thing. I wanted to see more surfing. If he's a surfer, let's see him fucking surf. Let's see the waves. We were never near the water. Let me see the fucking water. But so I think that's where I take points off of are those missed opportunities of where you could have shown like the water being destructive with, you know, the crabs and the stuff. Like they didn't even show the crabs crawling all over his face. That could have been an easy fix.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was cut. I don't know. But that would have been a beautiful shot of like, look at this beautiful boy in his prime, you know, and all these ucky crabs, these pop bright red crabs, you know, going to town on his fucking face. You know, that would have been mm-hmm. something very impactful. But we just get our characters reacting to it. Like, mm-hmm. oh, look at those crabs. Gross. And that doesn't connect to me as much.
No, the book was difficult for me to read.
And I want to see that. I want to see it.
Absolutely.
Like, throw me in there. This is a visual place that we are in. You're a visual storyteller. Show it to me. Don't tell me about it. Oh, those crabs. Look at him go up his asshole. Whoa, holy crap. You know, like, I want to see it. He grabs up the
his asshole.
I want to see him eat out his entire asshole.
Oh my God.
I want to see it. So that's where I take points off the aesthetics. There were points where it was very nice, very beautiful, very nicely shot. Like you said, Pars, there were body scenes where we go against their body. And I'm not even like knocking the beaver shot because it was a beautiful beaver shot, you know. Like I wonder what it's there for, but also I'm like looking at it going, that's a nice beaver. Okay, great, cool. it was pretty. So anyway, 3. And I'm gonna cut the whole thing. No, I'm just kidding.
just have it so you're saying so anyway.
3. Yeah, that's it. Cut it. 3. All right,
that's it.
All right, we are going to go to emotional power. This is the symbolism behind it. This is the interpretation, the art as experience, as oneself in relation to the universe. This is the meaty, the nitty gritty. I don't know who to start with. Who wants to start?
Me.
Okay. Take the reins, Pars.
For myself, for my own personal rank. I give this 5. For my rank to give out, I give this 3.
Okay. Talk about that, please.
This had a big impact on myself. It caused, or it, you know, tipped off a bunch of research, and I learned a lot, and I'm excited to take what I've learned into more film views, more reading of books, and more creations that I do myself. But I give this a 3 to give out because you may or may not have that same experience. Mm-hmm. It may really bother you. And even though I think that contains emotional power, I can't justify giving that 5 because it's not a very good emotional power.
Wow. Okay. Well, it was a huge emotional journey, I think, for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we can all agree on that at the very least. Court, do you want to go next?
Yeah. I gave it kind of like going between 2 and 2.5 because I think that, you know, obviously there are a lot of movies where these characters have experiences that I can't like relate to, but I feel like I should be able to kind of like at least connect with them on some kind of level. And I just didn't get that with any of these characters. They were very, they just weren't written well enough that I could. And then in like interpretation, it's been like, I don't know, I've been thinking about it a lot and then like able to like analyze it through all these like different lens, and it had me pulling out the book Men, Women, and Chainsaws, even though that book is like very different from like this subject matter. But I was able to kind of like understand things a lot better through kind of like her, Carol Cleaves, I think is the author, through like
not
her.
Kristen Cleaves.
And what's that about?
No, wait, hold on, let me look the title.
Kristen Cleaves is our writer.
So it's like, it was written in the 90s. Oh, wait, okay, Carol J. Clover. It's called Men, Women, and Chainsaws. And it's just about gender in horror film. And it doesn't touch on race as much as I would have liked it too, because I feel like she was kind of missing a lot in that aspect, but it is like a really good source material. But anyway, I was able to, she talks about like a lot of like masculinity in horror movies, and that really connected in a sense. But then, yeah, for the most part, I just like didn't get a lot of emotional power out of it. So 2 to 2.5.
All right. Thank you. And a nice plug. It's been a while since I've read that book.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. This is hard for me. This is really hard for me because it's, to me, I see this as an exploitation film, mm-hmm. a teen 90s, early 2000 druggy white kid exploitation film. I don't mind exploitation films. I like exploitation films. The thing is though, with a lot of exploitation films is that there's kind of like a reverence to the subject matter that they're taking from, mm-hmm. whether that's good or bad, like blaxploitation, like all of the I don't know what you call it, rapesploitation, like that, I, you know, I spit on your like graves.
Rape revenge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like things like that. You know, there is like that nugget of like respect that I feel is just lacking here. I really do. When I watched this kind of again, I just felt infuriated. I just found it really offensive. Like I said, it's like this geode of time that we should examine and not forget, but not emulate either. When it comes to Black and African Americans, their culture, when it comes to gay, straight, bi, everything in between, sexualities and genders and sexism and homophobia, it's all mashed in there. So to me, it's like, it's if I had watched this movie on my own, I would have just been like, I hate this movie, the end. I would have given it one star, one Cthulhu, the end. But because of the teasing out with Pars and just everything else, it, like you said, court, it, I mean, like it this has me opening up books that I have not mm-hmm. opened up in a very long time. This has me looking for research that I have not looked before. I am looking into new people, like Dr. Kitwana and things like that, to where I wouldn't have before. So has it opened a door? Yes, it has. Has it brought me in relation to the universe? In a way, it has. I can't deny that, but I feel like I can't also give it a higher rank because it's still, I feel like at the end of the day, I would watch this movie and be like, I don't connect to it. Mm-hmm. I find it kind of offensive. And again, we all read things as different people. One of my favorite examples of this, and I know I'm being an old person right now and telling old tales, but one of my favorite examples of this is when I watched Troll Hunters with a few of my friends, because I was showing them it. And I love Troll Hunter. It's this great Norwegian film, and it's got these trolls in it, and it, you go and you hunt the troll, but you can't, you have to be like all atheist, or you can't be a Christian at the very least, because the troll will smell out the Christian. Well, there happened to be, everybody said, oh yeah, I don't believe in Jesus. Well, somebody was kind of lying and the troll smelled them out. Big trouble, big bad things happen. Me as an atheist, I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept, because usually it's like the other way around. Like, oh, atheist bad, you know, Christian mm-hmm. good in these kind of movies, especially when it comes to like horror movies. Mm-hmm. And so I found that an interesting take. I had a friend who was Christian. She was offended by it. You know, she was like, I don't like that. I thought that was offensive. I was like, oh, that's an interesting take. And then I had another friend out of left field was like, this is anti-Semitic. And I'm like, oh, what are you talking about? He's Jewish. And he's like, well, you know, this troll with this big nose going, and I'm like, really? That's what you got out of that, is that you identified that as someone who's Jewish. And we all saw something completely and utterly different with three different religions / non-religions, whatever. And I thought that was so interesting and compelling.
Yeah.
And I feel like I think it's a good film. 1 out of 3 like it. You know, and then it's funny too, because I have a Norwegian friend, and when I told him that, he was like, oh my God, that's just the legend. You know, like, that's the legend. That's just what we tell people. Like, that's how it, that's our culture. How could they be offended at my culture? So again, there's four different takes on one thing. And I was just like, wow. And I think that's kind of what, in a way, is happening here right now, is just like, there's so many different things, so many different moving parts. So old person, long story short, never with me. I'm going to give it a 1 out of 5. All right. So we're going to move on to cultural relevance, influence, which is the communication of ideas, socially, philosophically, and politically. So it's representation to and of reality. Does anybody want to start off? Do you want me to start off?
I gave it a 4. Okay. The only thing I wasn't, like I said, was the focus on something. And that's the communication of ideas. He tried to communicate too many ideas, like the book. But, I mean, he needs to recognize that he is making a film. So things need to be a little bit more focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a...
Unless you're somebody like Pulp Fiction.
Tarantino.
Yeah, Tarantino.
Yeah. It takes a special kind of storyteller to tell a story kind of like that. I'm actually going to give this a 2 out of 5. And I think that's because it holds kind of that early 2000s, late 90s, that geode kind of like I was talking about, of like the tropes and the offenses and the taste and the style of that late 90s and early 2000s, for better or for worse. It does encapsulate that. And so we are able to go back and to look at that and be like, okay, this is part of that era, for better or for worse. I don't believe that all of it is correct, obviously, because I lived through it and I knew kids like that, not killers. Maybe I do. I don't know. But I think it does encapsulate something. We are so, so much better at having more voices and having more expressions and stories and things like that. We're better. We're not where we need to be, but we're getting better. And mm-hmm. I think that is a good example of kind of where we don't want to end up being continuously. Because when you get in that vacuum, that's all that it's going to be. So again, 2 out of 5.
Yes. So I decided on a 1.5 out of 5. I think that, like you said, it did present a group of people in a way and like portrayed their life, how it happened. Because I mean, yeah, because people like that, like them, do exist and did exist. But I think that, like Parz said too, that the story really just, it had so much going on and it really just did not center on anything. And I read a lot of the reviews, as far as influence go, I read a lot of like how the reviews and how like all these people thought of it. And it was just like so mixed. It was like either people really loved it or they really hated it. And a lot of comments were like, this is such an important movie to watch. And then others were like, this is just the biggest piece of shit ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one thing that people who loved it were really commenting on was how the kids at the end didn't feel remorse. And that was like the biggest takeaway. But I just like didn't really see how that was like shown at all. Like, was, I don't know, like, it just, if that was the whole message he was trying to send, then I just didn't see that. Because I mean, that's just a whole different
showing. Yeah, I don't think he was showing that.
Yeah, because like, that's just,
yeah, he started to there at the very end when they were in the courtroom, but no, that was just part of the story. That was,
yeah,
he didn't, yeah, I mean, he could have focused on that. Heather's right. Kind of did a little.
Yeah. And like, obviously, like, Derek looks like he really just hates his life right now. And you can't really show, he just didn't show how, I mean, they were all fighting, but that didn't show whether or not they actually did feel remorse. And I just, there were just like so many like political things, just so much. And it just didn't narrow it down at all. And instead, it just perpetuated a lot of harmful tropes, like violence against women and all homophobes are gay and just all these really bad stereotypes, and it didn't like challenge them at all.
So its audience is there, but it's probably narrow.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, both ladies. Pars, do you usually have recommendations?
Yeah.
So do you have any recommendations for us?
So if you liked this, you may like The Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia. That's on Prime. A movie called Chained. I don't know where you can find that one, though. That's an indie film. It's a lot of allegory in that one. You might like the Babadook.
I like the Babadook.
There's one that's relatively new. I don't know if it's, I think you have to rent it right now, but it should be free soon enough. It's called Swallow. Might want to just look into that one and see if that's something you're interested in. It'll either be or won't. I mean, it's a slow burn. And then Girls on Fire by Robin Wasserman is a novel as well.
Very good. Those are a lot. A lot of people have to keep up with you, Pars. Do you have anything that you'd like to suggest, Court?
I think as far as the representation of like 90s, kind of like the 90 culture that this movie kind of wanted to portray, the movie Mid-90s that came out like in 2018, I thought that did like a better job in most regards. It just had a better story. It was kind of filmed in like a 90s gradient kind of thing. And
what's that called?
Mid-90s, Jonah Hill directed it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's on Amazon Prime. I think it's free, so if you have Prime.
Yeah, if you have Prime and not, like, one of the million channels.
Yeah.
Oh, I was so mad about that.
You have to basically sell your soul to watch a movie.
Jeez Louise, it used to be so easy.
I miss it. Having one remote control.
I'm like, oh, is this on Prime? Oh, it is on Prime. And then I go there and it's like, oh, start a free trial for butt flicks. I'm like, son of a bitch. Then I have to remember to take it off because then it's a piece of shit. Anyway, I'm going to recommend if you want something like early 2000s, kind of 90s-ish, that's kind of in the same vein, I would suggest Heavenly Creatures, which is based also on a true story. It's got Kate Winslet, and that is also about murder. I'd also suggest Trainspotting, which is also about drugs and young adults doing bad stuff and living life and trying to figure out what they're trying to do in life. And Pulp Fiction, because it's always a fun one to watch. And Requiem for a Dream, because drugs are bad, kids. Well, bad drugs are bad. I guess good drugs are okay.
I almost chose that for a family book club book.
Please do.
You're like, next is Plague Dogs. Next is, I'm trying to think of like all the worst books that I can think of. Family book club.
50 Shades of Grey next.
Oh,
only
no.
Ironically.
Or not. I don't know.
All right. Well, so that was part three of three. We have gotten through Bully. We have done it. So next time is actually my pick, which is probably not going to be three parts. Mine is probably not going to be that in depth. But it was written by somebody famous, starring somebody famous. It is a 1972, not quite classic, but on the cusp of it, from Amicus Productions, that is a similar style to Hammer horror films, but it is a British horror anthology called Asylum, which is starring Peter Cushing and was written by Robert Block of Psycho fame. So that is on Tubi for people who want to watch along. So again, that is Asylum. It is an anthology. It is British, so we can have a spot of tea as we watch it and talk and see if it is art or not.
What is, you said it's like Hammer Films?
Yeah, Hammer Films were a type of production company that was in England, and they were known for kind of like their, I don't want to say kind of cheesiness, but like overdoneness of blood and gore, and they had a very specific style within like the 60s and the 70s. People have said that Sleepy Hollow is a tribute to horror, Hammer horror films. The way that the pacing does and the way that the blood and the effects are is kind of like a tribute to, a modern tribute to it. So this isn't very similar in the same style because they were both at the same time in England and used some of the same actors. But this, whereas Hammer kind of usually went pretty more hardcore with it, Amicus went a little less hardcore. But Robert Block did do, I think, three or four of their movies for them. But this one was the most popular, and this was also the last one that he wrote for them. So Asylum, 1972, on Tubi. We will see you all. Do you have anything to plug, Pars?
I have two more movies to watch for my Von Trier list. All I have left to watch is The Five Obstructions and Dogville. And then I will be making his scariest. I don't know if I'm going to do scariest or if I'm going to do like where to start with him. But I'm going to do something.
It's going to be Armageddon, whatever it is. It's going to be good, but it's going to be also the end of the world. Court, do you have anything in the mixer?
Can it just be anything?
It could be anything, whatever you want to plug.
All right, so I just read this book, Little Eyes, by Samantha Schweblin. She is an author from Buenos Aires, and she lives in Berlin now. And so she writes like really creepy horror. And her book, Kentuckus, was published in 2018 and just came out this month. And so you should read it if you have the opportunity to. You can buy it. It's probably anywhere. I'm not sure. I got mine from Powell's bookstore. So yes. But anyway, it's a wonderful book. It's like about voyeurism and just like interconnectivity in the 21st century. And someone's always watching you. And it's very creepy and unsettling. And it's a good read.
People are always watching me. I mean,
oh yeah,
Steve, the FBI government is watching me right now. I find it comforting now.
Yeah, Phil's my friend.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll buy a pizza and he'll buy a pizza. And we'll just laugh and laugh. No, that sounds terrific. Can you say that book's title again?
Yes, Little Eyes by Samantha Schweblin.
Perfect. I'm going to plug myself because I'm an asshole. I just before this podcast, I wrote a little article about my experiences of staying the night in a haunted house. The haunted house, the Conjuring house. It was nice. Virtual. It was virtual. It was fun. I kind of just documented my experiences, what was going on. It's not a super long read, but I have tons of pictures. I built a fort, everybody. So come and join me in my fort and with my wine, and we will have a good time, probably.
I think I shared that one on Twitter.
Sweet. Thank you.
Does your shark have a name?
Yeah, Brucina.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. All of my creatures have names, but my plants don't.
Did you like Deep Blue Sea, that movie?
You know, I kind of did.
I've said so many times.
Okay, so Deep Blue Sea has two things. It has Samuel L. Jackson, and it has sharks.
Nice.
Yes.
And that will always win me over. So, I love it.
It's got the Skarsgård in it too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And it's got that cool rap song in the end by,
wasn't it LL Cool
James? Is it LL Cool J? Fuck. It's been so long.
I love Cool James. Yeah.
Yeah. <it's>
Yeah. My hat is like a shark's fin, you guys. I felt so connected. Okay, so I felt a 5 for my connection to the song. Because I was one with the universe. So that's what I got to plug. That's what we got to plug. We are writers at Haunted MTL. Come and join us. Because we're really talented, everybody. And come and join us next time. Ladies, say goodnight.
Goodnight.
Well, it's bye.
Still evening for me, but goodnight.
Whatever, it's night. Oh.